Thank you very much, worship team. Some good worship songs to be singing there, and I could actually sing the one a little better this morning than 6 days ago here on Monday morning. We sang that same song during the funeral. There's 800 people packed in here, and I just thought, I can't sing Bless Your Holy Name, because I was standing over here. It was, you know, we put as many seats as the fire department would allow us in, and I'm looking here, and I'm seeing the four-year-old who's lost his mother. I'm thinking, how am I going to sing? And sometimes life makes us angry, doesn't it? Sometimes God makes us angry when things seem unfair. Like a 38-year-old mother of four passing away. Sometimes just stuff happens in life and we get angry. Like Friday, I'm leaving after work here, and I normally go north on King George to my house. Just I live close by the YMCA. It takes me about 12 minutes to get home. And I thought, oh, I'm going to pick up a flag, because on Tuesday we're doing a staff bike ride. Where are we going anyways, Gord? I don't even know. Yeah, the bike ride. Tawasin. Okay, we're biking to Tawasin. And so, I don't even know where that is, but we're going to bike there to Tawasin. And as long as somebody points me in the right direction. But I thought I'd get a flag, because some of the staff are kind of competitive, you know, and they think it's kind of a race. And so I want to make sure I got my flag, so when I'm so far ahead, they can kind of see where I am, kind of thing. So it... You know, so I thought, oh, I'll get my flag, and get home. And so I thought, that'll add like an extra 5 minutes onto my commute. And I forgot how 150-second backs up. An hour later, I'm still on the road, and I'm banging my steering wheel, and I'm angry. Life gets us angry all kinds of ways. I remember a couple weeks back, Ryan and Sherry Zindler, their home group, they had put on a barbecue, a picnic for Marian Hoffman, a Welcome Canada adoption party, and we got invited. So I said to the kids the day before, I said, hey, we're going to Crescent Beach tomorrow. It's going to be fun. The weather's supposed to be great. We're going to have a good time. We'll be together with some other Grace Pointers there. And so Sunday morning after church, we head over there, and we got stuff in the van, and my wife's driving the other vehicle, and we stop at Crescent Beach, and we're looking, okay, where is everybody? You know, we're looking around, where are they? And my wife, Sheila, says, well, where is this party? I said, well, somewhere around here. It's got to be close by. And we've been to other barbecues at Blackie Spitz, so we were kind of looking around in that area, and didn't see anybody. And so again, my wife, Sheila, says, well, what did the email say? I said, I don't know what the email said, but it said somewhere around here. Let's just keep looking. And we went around, a different area there. We're looking. And then I'm getting frustrated, eh? Because I just can't find where everybody is. And the next stop, we didn't bother pulling the cooler out and the lawn chairs, because I was getting grouchy from hauling the stuff to a spot where nobody was. And I'm looking around, kind of thing. And then Sheila, my wife, says to me, well, why don't you phone Ryan? So I'm checking my contacts. I don't have his number on me. And So I'm getting kind of angry. Then my daughter wants to go home to change, so she'll have her bathing suit so she can walk in the ocean, kind of thing. I said, we're not going home. And I get mad at Kelsey. And then she gets out of my vehicle, hops in with my wife and my other daughter in the other vehicle, because angry dad is now on the loose here and all mad because we can't find, you know. And then, so my wife, Sheila, she's phoning somebody to get Ryan and Sherry's cell number, and I'm driving around in the van, and then as she's talking to Ryan, I happen to drive by in the van, and the Bluetooth connects, so I hear my wife talking to Ryan, so he's, you know, explaining something. I'm just mad at that point. What do? I hit the phone button and disconnect Ryan. You say, well, that's crazy. Ryan was your answer to where they were. But that's the problem with anger, right? Anger is like a bulldozer. When you're angry, you're not thinking clearly. And so here the guy who could help me, I cut him off and I just keep driving. finally, I stop at the end of the street, and I'm kind of in a moment of sanity. I think, I should just check my email. I've got my phone. The email comes to the phone. I should just look what the email says. So I go back, scroll. Oh, party at Crescent Park. Oh, it wasn't at Crescent Beach. It's at Crescent Park. We're in the wrong spot. So we, you know, go over to Crescent Park, meet up with a group. The first person I see is Gurge, one of our elders. And he says, hey, Rick, how are you doing? I said, hey, Brother Gurge, I'm full of the joy of the Lord, you know. I'm just angry. All for coming late to a party. All kinds of things in life cause us to be angry. I got all kinds of stories I could share with you. Those are the stories from the last couple weeks. If I went a couple years, you could hear stories of deeper anger and the strain that it's put on some of the relationships in my life. And today on Father's Day, as we continue our series, Life is Relationships, I felt strongly to talk about the subject of anger. And the verse that has kept coming to my mind the last couple weeks is 1 Timothy 2:8. If we want to stick it up on the screen there, Dale, why don't we read it together? Therefore, I want the men to everywhere to pray, lifting up holy hands without anger or disputing. So the Apostle Paul gives us the challenge there to be men without anger. Now, 1 Timothy 2 is an interesting passage there. It's got a section where there's some specific instructions for women, some specific instructions for men, and this is one of those specific instructions for the men. And a couple of weeks ago in a sermon, I talked about the broken mirror. You remember that message? You don't remember it? I get angry when people don't remember my messages. You got to remember when I smashed the mirror, like, you know. And we looked at the first people, Adam and Eve, and how sin entered the world. And the Salam Olehim, the image of God, was shattered as a result of them eating the forbidden fruit. And then we see the result, the consequences of sin entering the world and into the first family. So if you have a Bible, I invite you to turn with me to Genesis chapter 4. Let's take a look at the first family and the consequences of anger there. So you can turn Genesis chapter 4 or turn on your YouVersion and click on events, Grace Point Church, and you'll see the outline there on YouVersion. Genesis chapter 4, we read these words. Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, with the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man. Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. So we got the very first two children there, Cain and Abel. Now, the name Cain kind of sounds like the Hebrew word acquired or gotten. And Abel, his name sounds like the Hebrew word temporary or breath, which is going to soon prove to be prophetic in this story. Verse 2 continues. Now Abel kept flocks and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry and his face was downcast. Well, the writer describes the two kids in their occupations. One was a grain farmer, the other raised livestock. Now, this section raises some difficult questions. The why question. Why was God looking with favor on one and not the other? And how? How did God display that favor? You know, and we don't know precisely why or how. You know, how did God show his favor? This image here has, the fire coming on Abel's offering. And so some commentators speculate that God sent fire down from heaven, you know, to burn up the one offering and not the other. We don't know that. It doesn't say that here. Perhaps he spoke from heaven. The more troubling thing is why? Why would God accept one offering but not the other? As verse 4, I'm using the NIV, the Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering. What does your translation say there? Some of you got accepted the offering. Some of you have accepted there. Or looked with regard. How many of God looked with regard there? King James uses that, or respected. So why is God respecting, looking with regard, accepting one offering and not the other? You know, we don't know. Some have speculated that perhaps it's has to do with in Abel's offering, there's the shedding of blood. And the book of Genesis says that life is in the blood. You know, we don't know that. There's no specific instructions given here around there that God wanted an animal sacrifice as opposed to a grain offering. In fact, in the Pentateuch, you see other examples of grain offerings being given to the Lord. There may be a clue there in verse 4. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the, what do you have in your Bible? The firstborn. So it could be, because it doesn't say that about Cain and his offering, that it could be that Abel, you know, chose the lamb that was unblemished, spotless, offered that as an offering to God, but whereas Cain kind of gave the leftover fruits, vegetables, you know, the stuff that was past the due date. You know, we don't know. Is the writer implying that with the word firstborn? We're not sure. I almost said the word sacrifice there, which is actually the wrong word to use. And Abel brought an offering. The Hebrew there is minna, that they're bringing offerings. They're not bringing sacrifices to the Lord. That's why I don't think it's a grain versus animal sacrifice offering. That's the problem here. It seems to be something deeper. Something perhaps in Cain's heart that was wrong. We get a little bit of a glimpse of this in Hebrews 11. I put on your outline. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offering. And by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. So there the writer says he's bringing a better offering. Everybody say the word better. Better, that there's something better about his offering. Like I said, we don't know the reason, but it seems to have something to do with his heart and the motivation in his giving. And particularly we see that in his response when God rejects his offering. Let's take a look at it. Verse 5. But on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. So Cain's angry, very angry. And God confronts him. Why are you angry? And gives him another choice and gives him a warning there where he says, sin is crouching at your door. Or as the message says, sin is lying in wait, ready to pounce. And the word that they, or the phrase that's used there in Hebrew, a couple images that are used around that phrase. One that describes an animal that's ready to pounce, something like a lion that's just ready to attack. So when the writer says sin is crouching at your door, that kind of a word picture comes to mind. Or another way that the phrase was used, it was used to refer to a Mesopotamian demon that would lie in a doorway ready to ambush a victim. So you've got kind of those two word pictures. So you can see the strong warning that God is giving there. That, like Cain, hold on. You know, danger ahead. Watch your anger. Something's going to happen here. And sure enough, something does happen. But not before God asks him that question. Why are you angry? A question that God also asks us. That we need to be introspective about when we find ourselves angry. A question I should have been asking myself there at Crescent Beach as I was driving around furiously. Why are you so angry, Rick? What's causing this anger? Because anger is always a secondary emotion. It's got something that's fueling the anger. Let me suggest three possible things that could be fueling our anger. The first one is hurt. Hurt or pain. Now, I don't mean physical hurt as much as emotional hurt. That perhaps, like Cain, felt rejected here by God. His pride, his ego is wounded. The same thing happens to us. And it could be towards God, could be towards other people. And so we have hurt feelings. It can happen easily in families, right? Sometimes parents get their feelings hurt because, let's say, their kids just like treat them like an ATM machine. And it's all the conversation is about, Dad, I want some money. You know, and we get angry. Or sometimes the reverse. Kids get angry when parents don't listen to both sides of a story. Our feelings can so easily get hurt. And long term, that hurt we may call pain. When there's deep trauma involved, the hurt is built up over years, and we live with this pain, and this pain fuels our anger. Remember the movie Forrest Gump? How many have seen Forrest Gump? There's a scene in there I never forget. That's Jenny going back to her house where she grew up in. And she picks up rocks and she starts hurling them against the side of this house. She's just angry because that's the house where she was sexually abused. And then Forrest says some statement about sometimes there are never enough rocks. All the pain of life, the hurt of life can sometimes fuel our anger. Are you angry? What's causing that anger? Is there some underlying hurt there? Some pain that's causing you to be angry. When God asks Cain and he asks us, why are you angry? A second cause could be fear. Everybody say that word, fear. Fear. We're afraid of things. We feel threatened. And when we feel threatened, that can cause us to be angry. Sometimes when we're around a certain person, let's say we got to walk on eggshells around this person, let's say at school or at work, and we get angry because we can't be ourselves around this person. And that fear fuels that anger. Sometimes as fathers, we get angry with our kids. Let's say our young adult kids or teenage kids, they're out, they're past curfew, and we're like, it's 2 a.m, where's my kid? And then we start imagining the worst. And then we get angry. Why aren't they answering the text? What has happened? Sometimes we're fearful for another person's safety, fearful about the future. And that can cause us to be angry. God asked Cain, why are you angry? He asks us, why are you angry? Perhaps a third cause could be frustration. Everybody say the word frustration. Frustration. That's perhaps the most common cause of anger is frustration. We want something. We have a goal, but our goal gets blocked. It could be as simple as, you know, watching a TV show and then somebody picks up the remote in your house and changes the channel. And you're like, you know, I just want to finish the show. Sometimes it's more serious when we have a plan for our lives, let's say, and our parents or our spouse oppose us on that plan. And it's normal to want something, and that's okay. But when we don't get what we want, we tend to get frustrated because the desire is not realized. We think it's terrible. It's terrible. I'm not getting what I want. And then if it's another person that's blocking our goal, then we think, you shouldn't be frustrating me. I want my own way. And then we think, well, you're bad. You're bad for blocking my path. And then we want revenge or we lash back at the person. Anger through frustration. Anger is the warning light on the dash of our car. It's telling us, pop open the hood, look below the hood. What is causing this anger? Because as it keeps flashing, that anger is going to turn to danger. And anger is the destroyer of so many relationships. So the first question God asks Cain is, why are you angry? Like I said, it's a good question for us to be asking ourselves when we're angry. Why am I so angry? You know, to get out to, perhaps as men, to take a walk when we're angry. What's the number one coping strategy of men when they're angry? They don't go out and take a walk. They go out and take a, starts with a D, a drive. They go for a drive. How many, now some have a drink too. How many angry men on a Friday night or a Saturday night are racing through the lower mainland? Anger. How many accidents are caused by angry drivers? Why am I angry? Notice the a second question that God asked Cain. Verse 7, if you do what is right, will you not be accepted? That's the choice that Cain faces and we face. If we do what's right, will we not be accepted? Because we so easily do what's wrong with our anger. There's three ways we can deal with our anger. Two of them are the wrong way. Number one is we let it out. We just kind of spew it. And some of us are like that. We're angry and we just kind of vent it out. And sometimes we feel kind of cathartic about that. We feel good about that. The problem is we spew it out, it then lands on someone else. And how many relationships have been broken because of that anger spewing out? The Bible warns against this way of processing our anger. Proverbs 29:11, I put on your outline. Fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end. Venting anger has its consequences. Separates us from God, separates us from others, and from ourselves. Some of us let it out. Some of us keep it in. We just kind of repress it, right? We stuff it down. You know, we even deny, oh, you're angry. I'm not angry. You know, and the result, of course, is we become inwardly angry. And this has all kinds of side effects to it. Sometimes it affects our health. You know, we stuff it down and then our stomach keeps score. You know, sometimes it affects our mental health. Anger turned inward sometimes becomes depression. You know, and so we become depressed with this rage inside of us. You know, some of us let it out, some keep it in. How many are like my wife and one daughter? You kind of spew it out. How many are let it out kind of people? Okay, some of us are. How many are kind of like me and my other daughter? We tend to repress it, put it down. How many do that? You know, the Bible says there's another way. Proverbs 14:29. Why don't we stick it up on the screen there, please, Dale? Oh, you got it on there. Excellent. Let's read it together. People with understanding control their anger. A hot temper shows great foolishness. The key is for you and I to master our anger. To not vent it, to not to suppress it, but to control it. Well, how do we do that? How do we do that when we're angry at God? Because someone's passed on that we didn't think was right. How do we do that when somebody's blocked our goal? How do we do that when we find ourselves in a traffic snarl and we're banging our steering wheel? How do we do that when we're fearful about something? How do we control our anger? Well, the first thing is, I believe we've got to own our own anger. We've got to admit that we're angry. We've got to take responsibility for our anger. We've got to stop the blaming that says, oh, he makes me angry or she makes me angry. We've got to stop looking at an outward solution and look inside, especially in our anger and relationships. Because a lot of ways, anger and relationships is kind of like a debt between two people. And we look at the other person and we think, they owe me. And we sometimes even say that in our head, you owe me because you did this to me. But how is that debt going to be repaid? And we can't control the other person's responses. They may be pushing our buttons and they may keep pushing our buttons. And we can do nothing in a sense about that other than to choose our response to what they're doing. So instead of thinking, oh, my sister makes me so angry, my parents make me so angry, my kids make me so angry, my coworker makes me so angry. No, we make ourselves angry. Maturity is when we realize that we can take ownership around our own anger. Not you make me angry, but I make myself angry. Why don't you say those four words to the person beside you? I make myself angry. It's owning our own anger to admit it and to stop looking at outward circumstances or other people around our anger and to own up for the cause in ourselves. And when we do that, then I really believe we're recipients ready for God's grace in our life, just like it happened in Cain's life. So let's get back to our story. Verse 8. Now Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. While they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. The Lord said to Cain, where is your brother Abel? I don't know, he replied. Am I my brother's keeper? The Lord said, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth. So there we've got the effects of the anger. I thought it's interesting, looking at the story this week, I was reminded there's more said about the anger than there is about the murder. The murder is just kind of a quick statement. The warning, again, is about the anger. So God says that he'll spend the rest of his days wandering on the earth. And so we have this spillover effect of the broken mirror, Genesis 3, playing out here in this first family of four, with one sibling killing the other. Cain's response, verse 13. Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land. I'll be hidden from your presence. I'll be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. Look at God's answer, verse 15. But the Lord said to him, not so. Anyone who kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over. Then the Lord put a mark on Cain so that no one who found him would kill him. And so Cain, for the rest of his days, he's got this mark. Now, we don't know what the mark is. There's all kinds of speculation. People have said things like, he's got a dog with him. You know, and so he's walking with this dog. And people, you know, back then, obviously, people didn't have pets. Dogs were scavengers, wild animals. And so people speculated that. I read this week, somebody said, oh, he wore a bright hat. Where do you get that in the story? another commentator said God put a horn on his head, kind of like a unicorn, you know. Again, that's not in there, you know. My best understanding from studying this passage in the Hebrew is my conclusion would be that that Cain was forced to wear a Vancouver Canucks jersey. You know, that was the curse, you know, that people would stay away from. We don't know what the mark of Cain was, but what we do see is incredible amount of grace in spite of the hideous act that he's just done. Verse 16. So Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Garden. I have trouble reading today. East of Eden, the land of Nod. Everybody say that name, Nod. Nod. Have you been to Nod? It's the place. It's always some funny guy. Yeah, I've been there. No. Thanks, Doug. Nod. It's the place where we feel we're apart from God's presence. The place where we feel we can't find God or find ourselves. It's the place where we feel we're beyond hope or beyond redemption. The place where we feel weak, helpless. A place where perhaps your marriage feels hopeless, or your kids seem distant from you, or your parents seem against you. The place where your life feels like it's falling apart. Cain leaves the presence of God and he goes to this land of Nod. But what happens in the land of Nod? God pursues Cain into the land of Nod. The same thing he does for you and I when we find ourselves in the land of Nod and we feel that we're far from God. We feel we've been rejected by God. We feel we've done too bad. We've messed up too far. We've wandered too far away from God. God pursues us in the land of Nod, just like he did for Cain. Take a look at the story. Verse 17, why don't we pick it up there? Cain made love to his wife, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Enoch. Cain was then building a city, and he named it after his son Enoch. Why don't we skip down verse 20? Adah gave birth to Jabal. He was a father of those who live in tents and raise livestock. His brother's name was Jabal. He was a father of all who played stringed instruments and pipes. Zillah also had a son, Tubal-Cain, who forged all kinds of tools out of bronze and iron. So we've got Cain, this murderer, who in a sense deserves death. What does God do for him? He protects him. He puts this mark on him, whatever it was, so other people wouldn't kill him in revenge. Cain ends up finding a wife. I know it's kind of creepy to think where the wife came from, but whatever. You know, he finds this wife, ends up having a family, and then they live in this city. You know, it's a primitive city, of course. You know, it's not like Vancouver. It's, you know, a few tents and that kind of thing. But there's a family there. There's some progress happening in the city that I just read about. Musical instruments and tools and raising livestock. All of this happening. This guy who's messed up so miserably experiences the common grace of God as he gets this brand new start in life. He didn't deserve any of that. I'm sure some days he just kind of pinched himself thinking, wow, God has done this for me. And friends, you and I, in our anger, in our brokenness, God will come and meet us with common grace in our own way. That even though our mirror is cracked, we still reflect the glory of God. Even though this world is broken and sin is in this world widespread, and we see the effects of it. You know, even this week on the news with the anger with Orlando and the hatred that someone has towards a group of people, that we see this hatred in our world, but there's still goodness in our world. The common grace of God. And like Cain, we've been angry. We've messed up relationships. We've made a mess of our lives. But God comes and meets us in common grace. How do we control our anger? By recognizing that common grace. And then more personally, the saving grace that God meets us at. Cain cries out to God, "My punishment is more than I can bear." What does God do? He protects him. How unexpected that is. The astounding mercy and grace of God comes out of left field to blindside him. Undeserved, completely free, saving grace. Verse 10, the Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." The blood of Abel. The writer of Hebrew picks up on this and he writes, Hebrews 12:24. "You have come to Jesus, the one who mediates the new covenant between God and people, and to the sprinkled blood, which speaks of forgiveness instead of crying out for vengeance like the blood of Abel." We've got the blood of Abel here in Genesis 4, crying out for vengeance. But what does God do? The cross. Forgiveness. For Cain, for you, for me. In the place of revenge, where we think God owes us or another person owes us, we find forgiveness. We find atonement. And we become freed from our anger. The next verse, verse 11 there. "Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground." What does the New Testament say? Galatians 3:13. "Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us." Oh, as descendants of this first family, Cain and Abel, We find brokenness in our own families, the effects of anger. But we don't live under the curse because Christ became that curse for us. Yeah, we see the effects. We see it even here in Genesis chapter 4 as the story continues on with Cain's kids. Verse 23 reads, Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, listen to me, wives of Lamech, hear my words. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times. Wow. The murder continues. The story of brokenness continues. The story of revenge and avenging. You almost hear the bitterness there in his voice as he says, oh, if Lamech seven times, then for me, 77 times revenge. Wow. And how they messed up there. He's got two wives to start a polygamy. You know, brokenness in relationships. But what does Jesus, how does he answer that? Matthew chapter 18, I put it on your outline. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times. Jesus answered, I tell you not seven times, but 77 times. The law of Lamech, Genesis 4, says 77 times revenge. Jesus comes through the cross and says 77 times forgiveness. That wherever there's anger, there will be forgiveness. Wherever there's revenge, there will be forgiveness. Christ has set us free. And we're no better than Cain. We also stand under the curse. But God comes and meets us at the cross. What about you? What about me? What are we going to do with our anger? One of the New Testament writers, Jude, he writes, woe to them, they have taken the way of Cain. Would that describe you? Describe me? Taken the way of Cain, that anger's ruling our lives, particularly men today on Father's Day. Dale, why don't we stick that 1 Timothy 2:8 verse up on the screen again. Men, why don't we read it together? Because it's written to us as guys. Therefore, I want the men everywhere to pray, lifting up holy hands without anger or disputing. There's a lot of angry men. Today's Father's Day. I was thinking of my dad this morning. If you were to ask me a first impression of my dad, my first thought would be he was an angry guy. That's the legacy he's left. Now, he did some good things in his life too, but that's what I remember most. Men, what kind of legacy do you want to leave? Paul writes, I want men everywhere to lift up holy hands without anger or disputing. Men, in a couple minutes, you can go get your dad's root beer. When you reach for your dad's root beer with your hand, is that hand connected to a heart that's angry? And if so, what's it going to take to deal with that anger? What's it going to take for you to be free of that anger? Men, let's see your palms. Show me your hands. I want men everywhere to lift up holy hands without anger or disputing. Men, can we be those type of men? That our hearts aren't filled with anger. And we're men of prayer. That anger isn't blocking that. And for all of us, men and women, that we find ourselves at the cross, we come with the brokenness of our lives and we inherited some of the effects of the brokenness, but the brokenness doesn't have the last word. Your family lineage doesn't have the last word. Sinfulness doesn't have the last word. Christ has the last word, and he set us free from the curse, and he set us free that the blood of Abel speaks one thing, but the blood of Christ speaks louder, and it speaks over your life, and the blood of Christ Christ covers over a multitude of sins. It covers over your sin, covers over my sin. We are atoned and we can be set free as men and women who are transformed through the Spirit of Jesus to be set free from the anger in our lives. And don't you want to live that way? Don't you want to live that way in this age of rage that we live in? You know, we have kids that are angry. We have teens that are angry. We have seniors that are angry. Can't we all be people who are free of that because we're followers of the Jesus way, and the Jesus way sets us free? Let's go to prayer. Let's go to prayer. Right now. There's some of us here who are angry. We've got to let go. Let go of some of that pain. Let go of some of that frustration. Let go of what that other person did. Maybe we've felt rejected in life. Like Cain, perhaps even felt rejected by God. God will meet you right now. He brought you here this morning. In the quietness of your heart, you speak to God. Let Him speak. Let Him minister right now. He can set you free, make you a brand new person. Oh, Jesus, we want to be men and women who can lift up holy hands. And your word says that anger doesn't bring about the righteous life that you desire. And we know that. And thank you, our righteousness is not something we earn. It's not by willpower, but it's something that you impute to us. We want to embrace that right now, Christ. Oh, we want to receive that from you. Set us free through your forgiveness, through your acceptance, because only you can meet our deepest longing. And thank you that just as you did it for Cain, you do it for us today. And we cry out to you, Abba, Father. Amen.